Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to Alupar's webinar to discuss the results of quarter three. Today with us we have Mr. José Luiz Godoy Pereira, CFO and Investor Relations Officer, and Mr. Luiz Coimbra, Investor Relations Manager. We would like to inform you that this event is being recorded and has simultaneous translation into English. To select the audio, click on the interpretation icon. For better reception, we advise you to mute the original audio. During this event, all participants will be able to listen to the presentation, and afterwards, we will begin the question and answer session when further instructions will be given. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements that may be made during this presentation regarding the company's business prospects, operating and financial projections and goals are based on beliefs and assumptions of Alupar's management, as well as on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not a guarantee of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions as they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. General economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors may affect the company's future results and may lead to results that differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. José Luiz Godoy Pereira, CFO and Investor Relations Officer. Mr. Pereira, you may proceed.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to Alupar's presentation of quarter three 2021 results. My name is José Luiz, and I have here with me today Mr. Luiz Coimbra, our Investor Relations Manager. We are going to organize this presentation as we always do. I'm going to go over the relevant material facts of the company. Luiz is going to present the financial results and figures, and then we can open for questions. Let's start with the material facts. The material facts that we had in quarter three 2021. I would like to start by highlighting the first material fact, which was the payment of the second installment of the dividends declared in the general assembly meeting. On August 30th, we paid $0.30 per unit. This was the second installment of the declared dividends. Now we have an outstanding payment of the third installment, which is scheduled for November 30. The second material fact that we recently announced was the entry into operation of the third generating unit of the La Virgen hydropower plant located in Peru. This has been a very challenging project for us and very challenging for the company. I'm talking about the entry of operation of the third generating unit of the La Virgen hydropower plant. As I said, it's been a very challenging project for the company, and we have completed this project. It was a 93 MW of installed power project, and we just completed the third turbine on July 31st, 2021. Another relevant fact that we announced to the market was the acquisition of a minority interest from FIFGTS. FIFGTS used to hold 30% of the interest of the Foz do Rio Claro hydropower plant. With this buy, we who had 70% now have 100%. This comes from a shareholders agreement that we had with FIFGTS, which provided for a put and a call option. Since we are approaching the deadline, we decided to exercise our call option and buy these shares. We also had a material fact, actually two material facts related with the same project, which was the T&E project, the Manaus-Boa Vista transmission system, which is also a very complex project. The most recent advance was that we signed an amendment with ANEEL, the Brazilian Electric Power Authority. So we signed this amendment with ANEEL to include an arbitration commitment clause for establishment of the definitive RAP within a range of RAP. This amount that you see here, the 329 million is a provisional RAP, and the definitive RAP will be defined in this arbitration process. But the minimum is this amount that you see here. And we also had on September 28, we had the issuance of the environmental license for installation. We are now in the negotiation stage with indigenous communities to detail the plan, the basic plan for compensation of indigenous populations. And finally, here's an update of the ongoing projects and the general status of the projects under construction. We have three projects under construction right now, TSM, Este, and TSC. Here's the general status of each of these projects. For TSM, we are nearly finished. We are at the final stages. The works are 94% completed, and we expect the project to be 100% completed by the end of this month or the beginning of next month, which means that we are going at a very good pace with this project. And Este, we also expect to finish this project by the end of the year. Differently from TSM, the Este project will be delivered on schedule, on the official ANEEL schedule. Whereas for TSM, if we meet this date that we form here, we will be accelerating the entry into operation by 7 months. But in the case of the Este project, we are right on time. Actually, the schedule said February as a deadline, and maybe we will be able to anticipate that by about 30 days. And the TCE project, the Colombia project, we are now in the negotiation stage for the license. The license was issued with a restriction for the last 15 towers. We are already appealing and trying to agree on the alternatives to be able to remove this restriction for these last 15 towers. Negotiations are advancing really well. So we believe that we will have environmental clearance for these last 15 towers that actually account for very little of the total towers, about 5% of the total towers. And we are working hard to get clearance for the last 15 towers. So this is the general status for these three projects. And now I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Luis Coimbra, our Investors Relations Manager, and he will present our financial highlights and numbers. At the end of his presentation, we can open for questions. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for attending this conference call to announce the results of quarter three, 2021. I will start my presentation on slide number 10 with the financial highlights for IFRS numbers, and then I'm going to give you more details about regulatory numbers. So let's start on slide number 10. The total net revenue this quarter was 1,168,000,000 compared 1.5 billion in the same period last year. Total net revenue this quarter, I'm sorry, we're having technical problems. We're having audio problems right now. I apologize. Ladies and gentlemen,
Please hold and stay connected. We will resume shortly. This reduction is explained by the 714 million decrease that we had in the infrastructure revenue due to the entry into operation of the ETB and ETB transmission units and TCC, which started operating in March this year. When we look at this chart, the bottom of the chart shows the EBITDA. The total EBITDA this quarter was 902.8 million, up by 20.7% over the 747.9 million recorded in quarter three 2020. The main impacts on these numbers were the 464.6 million decrease in the revenue of the transmission segment that I just explained, and also a reduction of 489.9 million in the infrastructure costs due to lower investments this quarter due to the entry into operation of the three transmission assets that I talked about. Now, looking at the top right corner, here we see the composition of our net income. Total net income was 240.3 million, up by 26.3% of the 190.3 million recorded in quarter three last year. And the two impacts here were the 154.9 million increase in the EBITDA and the 190.6 million increase in our financial result. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 11. Here we have details of the regulatory numbers. Let's start with our net revenue. Total net revenue was 716 million, 60.6% more than the 445.4 million year over year. So let's look at the regulatory numbers. And the two impacts on this calculation were the 154.9 million increase in the EBITDA and the 190.6 million increase in our financial result. Now, moving on to the next slide, slide number 11, I'm going to give you more details about our regulatory numbers. Let's start with our net revenue. The total net revenue was 716 million, a 60.6% increase against the 445.4 million recorded last year. This increase is basically due to the 214.8 million increase in the energy transmission revenue. 152.5 million was the revenue of the three transmission units that were put into operation. And the revenue of the transmission units was also impacted by the readjustment. We had an 8.06% readjustment for contracts indexed by the IPCA and 37.6% for contracts indexed by the IGPM, which represents a 65.2 million increase in this calculation. The generation segment had an 85 million increase in its revenue due to the increase in the PLD for this quarter. For our power plants, it was about 581 reals megawatt hour against the 89 reals that we had in quarter three last year. Now, let's look at the EBITDA on the bottom of the page. The total EBITDA was 570.1 million, a 67% increase against the 341 million recorded in quarter three 2020. And the main impact here was the 299.8 million increase in the revenue, as I just explained. Now, looking at the net income, total net income this quarter was 77.6 million. A 36.9% increase against the 56.7 million recorded in quarter three last year. And the main impacts here, first, the 228 million increase in our EBITDA that I just explained, and the 190.7 million increase in our financial result. This was mainly due to the 207 million increase in our financial expenses. So two highlights here. First, we had a 131.4 million increase due to the three transmission units that were put into operation.
and we had a 43.3 million increase in projects outside of Brazil. And here we had a foreign exchange rate variation between the two quarters. Moving on to the next slide, slide number 12. Here's the indebtedness of the holding company. The gross debt was 663.8 million, 153 million less than the 816.8 million recorded in December 2020. And this reduction was mostly due to the settlement of the sixth issuance of debentures that took place in April this year. The holding debt is only one debt now, the seventh debenture issuance, which was 100% fixed by the CDI and maturation in 2024 and 2025. Next slide. Here we see the consolidated debt profile. The gross debt was 9.395 billion, with a cash position of 1.612 billion, with a total net debt of 7.782 billion. When we look at the structure of this debt, there was no significant variation, and most of our indebtedness, 54%, is IPCA indexed, followed by CDI, accounting for 25%. The Colombia and Peru projects, the debt corresponding to the Colombia and Peru project, account for 12% of the total debt of the company. On the next chart, we see the amortization schedule. So the consolidated debt profile is still very prolonged. We have 37% of the maturation dates after 2026. The holding has the maturation of the seventh issuance of debentures throughout 2024 and 2025, and transmission and generation assets have their maturation dates distributed over the years according to the cash generation expectation for each project. Now, moving on to our next slide. It's our last slide, slide number 14. Here we have the performance of the company's share. Based on yesterday's closing of the market, Alupar's units had a devaluation of 6.16% against a devaluation of 7.87% in the IEE and 11.33% in the Ibovespa index. Now, in respect to the financial volume, we had an average of 22 million in the accumulated numbers for this year and 24 million in the period right after the follow-on of the exit of FIFGTS. This is the end of this presentation, and we can now open for questions. Thank you. We will now open for questions. Your questions can be asked. If you have a question, you can raise your hand and verbally ask your question. And as soon as we receive your question, there will be a request for you to open your microphone. So then you should click unmute to ask your question. If you're using a touch phone, press star nine to send your question. And you can also send your questions through the chat window on the bottom of your screen. Questions in English will be received only in text. Please wait while we poll for your questions. The first question is from Marcelo Sá, Itaú. Good afternoon, everyone. How are you? I have two questions. My first question, I want to better understand the company's strategy to negotiate the contracted units that you have for next year, the contracted energy price that you have for next year for GSS, considering the rainfall, which was above expected in October and substantially changed the price perspective. So how do you see this outlook for 2022? And my other question is about the M&A market. We see some very relevant movements in the generation M&As, the buy of Ecoenergia, for example. So what is your plan in terms of for the generation market? Are you planning to buy other companies, or are you still planning to grow through greenfield projects such as the Potiguar project that you have? And so you would like to be under contracted to close better prices looking forward. since the conditions today are not the most attractive. Yes, we have available and unavailable energy every year that we negotiate in anticipation of the next year. For next year, we still have about 80 megawatts, which accounts for about 20% or a little under 20%, between 15 to 20% of our total physical guarantee. And this will be actually lower because starting 2023, we will have the entry of PPA in the regulated market, which we already sold. And then we're going to have an increase in a capacity increase in 2023. We have contracts that we are already negotiating for 23, 24, and 25. And that's how we plan to work. We always leave a part of the contracted due to our strategy, due to GSF and everything related with that, with GSF. So we are contracting. We are structuring the company. We're being much more active in the free market. We're negotiating different PPAs in the free market with shorter terms. The idea is to work with terms between 3 to 5 years for sales contracts. And next year, the average price of the year, even with this outlook that you described, even with this change in the new wave, the industry has to pause and think, because the PLD price today is totally artificial. If this was truly the price, this should come from thermal power plants. If you look at the PLD this week, it doesn't make sense to keep thermal plants on. This is only making the energy more expensive for consumers, whereas those who should be paying for that are those who are under contracted or discontracted. So there should be a change in this sense, and we should encourage contracting. And when you have more encouragement to contracting, you end up having more incentive to an increment in supply. These very long PPAs will cause prices to drop because you will have very few off-takers. And it's very difficult for a company to plan in a volatile country like Brazil. How can it plan its consumption in 10, 15 years? It's very difficult for companies to plan their production structure for such a long term. So that's how we're working with this market in the mid-term and negotiating contracts in the market. So our strategy, particularly at this time, is to have a very strong presence in this market with smaller off-takers, with not so long terms, but they have middle terms for using this energy. But do you have any expectation, for example, GSF for 22? You talked about 3 to 5 year long contracts. Do you have any price range for the contracts that you're signing now that you can share with us? And my other question was about growth. In terms of growth, will you focus more on greenfields than M&A? And how do you see the M&A market, considering that many large transactions have just been announced, the CESP Votorantim transaction, Equatorial with Ecoenergia, the Omega merger. There's many things happening in this market. I think it's more for development. I don't know, we've been evaluating the possibilities. We have the capital course of the company. You have to follow this capital course. We see sometimes some transactions in the market, but we have a capital cost that is higher. So we always have to look for the best options that will bring the highest possible returns. And we need to have time. We're working with a portfolio, so we need to have time to negotiate this energy, always maintaining a part of it discontracted to cover for the GSF and working on greenfield as well. So I think the industry has a very high demand for renewables, and the pressure for energy from hydrocarbons in general tends to increase further in the future. The COP26 was a milestone. Despite the very high resistance, it will become clearer and clearer that this will be the future, and the demand for renewable energy will be huge, particularly now with this opening of the market. I think we will be seeing demand from investors and from the large industrial companies to zero their emissions when buying energy as well. So the demand will be growing in the future. And there's also the incentives that we expect to have starting in 2024. The TUSD discount and this incentive will have a relevant influence on the tariff and consequently the sales of renewables will have an increment. The price will have an increment starting in 2024. So this is one more scenario in which we will be able to grow organically and not through M&As. We will be able to stack different projects, which will give us enough time for the sales area to sell these projects. Thank you. The next question is from Carolina Carneiro. Good afternoon. I have two questions. First, about the T&E, what are the next steps for ANEEL and the company regarding the arbitration, the terms for definition of the new revenues, the estimated calendar for completion of the works, and the updated CapEx? The second question about the renewable project portfolio, wind energy and PCHs. Can you please give us an update about the plans for development, the market for sales of this energy, and the projects and scenarios and price scenarios for these projects? Okay, so you have different questions. First, about the T&E. We are now submitting the rebalancing request with the new financial advisor with ANEEL. This is part of the project. This is part of the process. I don't know what ANEEL will decide, but that's what we are submitting right now. And if we don't reach a common agreement in terms of the revenue with ANEEL, that's why we created the possibility of having this defined through an arbitration process, which will be conducted by the International Chamber of Commerce or in according to the rules of the Chamber of Paris to define what will be the final tariff for the RAP. Now, in respect to the execution of the works, IBAMA has issued the environmental license. However, we don't have the final contract signed with the indigenous communities. IBAMA issued this license based only on the indigenous environmental impact study. So now we have to agree on the final details with the indigenous communities. And this entails negotiation, not just for the T&E, because the indigenous leaders have a lot of claims, a lot of requests. And some of these risk requests are not related with the T&E project, but still, that's what they are presenting to us right now. And without judging the merit of the issue, I think each of these requests have to be reviewed, and each of us will have to be held accountable for the part, for their part of the work. So that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for an agreement between the indigenous community and the Brazilian government to remedy all the impacts and all the losses they were subjected to, at least in the past 100 years. So we're forming a committee and we will negotiate with the indigenous communities to come to this agreement. So that's what's happening right now with the TNE. Now about the renewable energy, I already talked about this in my previous answer, how we're structuring the negotiations. And I think things are moving. Now that we have this opening of the market, we're going to work on the free market, in the free market, which will more and more be reaching lower demand consumers until it reaches the level of household consumers. This is a new market that is now opening up for us and a new way for the industry to operate. We see a lot of opportunities related with that. And the smaller consumers, who are not the large consumers, these smaller consumers have shorter term contracts that do not reach the 10-year period. It's very rare to have this predictability. These are midterm contracts between 3 and 5 years.
What we have in our portfolio, we have a few wind power projects. We're going to have the Potiguar project in the state of Rio Grande do Norte. It's a very interesting project, a project with a very relevant capacity factor. It is a location that is very favorable. We also have the solar project, and the two first parks of the complex, because it's a complex with several parks. So the two first parks we already started implementing. Then we have a solar complex, which is a hybrid project. It's actually located under our wind power towers in the state of Ceará. It's a project that was already ongoing with wind power, so it has a very low connection cost because we had been connected there already, and we're going to use the structure of the wind power project for this connection. So it's a hybrid park. You have wind power and then you have solar power underneath. That's how we are going about the expansion of this park specifically. And we have a few other projects that are at earlier stages. But the idea is not to implement everything at once. That's what we want to do. We want to work with selling this energy and then expanding the installed capacity and then selling a little more. So every year we will have additional capacity coming and we will be negotiating some capacity. And we're going to have metrics with which we're going to work and expand the projects as we go, particularly in places where we have synergies. These two locations that I mentioned, the state of Rio Grande do Norte and the state of Ceará, we have very interesting synergies there and a very favorable condition in terms of costs and viability. I think I answered all your questions. The next question is from Carolina Carneiro. I have one more question. Can you update us on the call put option that the company has with Perfin and the dates in which you plan to exercise these options, and also what will be the investment for these options for you? This call and put option, actually this put option doesn't even exist because the Perfin wouldn't really exercise that put option. It is their put. We have a call over 30% of the shares and they have a put option over 100% of the shares. And for us, it would be the best thing in the world if they would exercise this put option, because the put was at the cost of 5% book value. So we would take the book value and update it with IPCA plus 5 and then discount the dividends. So this put option doesn't really exist right now. It would actually be great if Bethany actually decided to exercise that put option. Our call option, we're going to exercise our call. It's a merely financial issue right now. And what we are looking into, well, because there are different aspects. For example, what is the advantage of exercising this call? The call has the cost of IPCA plus 7.3. We think that we would be able to capture an even lower rate, and that would be a favorable point in terms of exercising the call right now. But since we had other debts that were more expensive, first we're trying to settle all of them. We started with generation, we are settling several old debts that we had in Foz do Rio Claro and Juiz, two of our hydropower plant projects. And we are trying to follow this schedule, and then there will come a point when we will get to that debt. The advantage is that that debt, since the call is off balance, because if you think with me, I have the call exercise, the call option that I can exercise, that it doesn't really impact our covenants. Since we were at a very important increase of the level of covenants because of all the projects that we have ongoing, this is what we will follow from now on. The idea is to exercise this option. I think we don't have enough time this year to exercise everything, but this is something that we're monitoring. Perhaps we'll exercise some of it this year and some of it next year, but we are monitoring our covenants. We are also monitoring the cost of our debt in the market. We're looking at all these alternatives, but I am sure that we will exercise this call. There's no doubt about that. This is a matter for us. There's no question here. Because in the flow of our projects, when you look at the flow of our projects, it is actually self-exercisable, because the flow of dividends that is received, since it is discounted from that amount, the PU of the share, the per unit of the share will drop, and it tends to be zero.
We are discounting the flow of the exercise of the call option, and that's how the project was set up. In the original idea, the call option was exercised over the course of 8 years, reducing the PU of the shares, and we would exercise at zero or very close to 0 reais per share. The only thing that will make us study the possibility of anticipating the exercise of this call is the financial cost. Because in 2016, the cost of the debt was very attractive at the time. And today, the cost of the call, the cost of the debt is not so attractive, not as much as it was in the past. Of course, there are some options to make this cost lower, but there's a downside because as soon as you exercise this call, you have an increment in the leverage. I don't have the exact number or the order of magnitude, but it's about 100 million to exercise all the calls. I had checked this number, but maybe it's not the same now. Maybe I'll have to check again because we had the payment of the dividends and there's an update, so I'll have to recheck. But one important fact for those of you who are looking at our balance sheet, this year we had an impact in September, which was very relevant in the financial expenses item. You see that we had a relevant increase in our EBITDA, but also a relevant impact on our financial expenses. And this was basically due to the increase in the IPCA index. So it would be even better to analyze it using IFRS because we have a stock of contracted revenue that is adjusted by the IPCA. But when we look at the regulatory balance sheet, we update our debt stock, but we don't update our receivable stock, which is also IPCA indexed. So there's this mismatch when you look at our balance sheet in the financial expenses vis-à-vis what we see in our receivables, our future receivables, which is much higher than the debt stock that we have now, and it's being readjusted based on the IPCA, although this is not shown in the regulatory balance sheet. It's only showing the IFRS balance sheet. Well, that's how we have to look at things. We have to look at things from both sides. The next question is from Gabriel Dias de Almeida. Good afternoon. I'd like to know whether the company has any expectation in terms of when the constructions will be completed with the regulatory deadline of February 2022. So the question is to know whether the company will be able to meet the deadline, the regulatory deadline, since the Este project seems to be delayed. Are you expecting to have any problems with this delivery? And we see from the results from quarter three that you still have 9% to go. Well, the Este project, it doesn't make sense to anticipate the delivery. The deadline is February 2022. It wouldn't make sense to accelerate this project. It never made sense to us to accelerate this project because in order for the project to have systemic benefits, we will only have revenue if this project is generating systemic benefits. And this project connects to a substation from a different agent. And we are running late with that other, they are running late with that other project. So if we anticipate, we would run the risk of having to anticipate the disbursement of the CapEx, and then we would be we're going to deliver it on time. There's only 9% to go. This is only related with the execution. We will meet the deadline defined by ANEEL. And after we deliver, and based on ANEEL's schedule, we are entitled to revenue regardless of the other agent having completed the substation to which we are connected. But if we did anticipate, that would be the developer's risk. If the developer decides to accelerate or anticipate, it will take on the risk of a third party, which can delay their own project. And this project is a project that will allow for the systemic benefit. So there's a connection that we will make at a certain point. And if this connection is not made, our project cannot be used. So in this project, it doesn't make any sense to accelerate. For the TSM project, the project will be delivered on time by the end of the year. The project should be energized. And if we deliver by the end of the year, this will be an acceleration by 7 months against the originally planned. If you look at the projects being delivered by other companies in the market, many companies talked about accelerating their projects by 1, 2, 3 years. But you see that mainly due to what happened in recent years, particularly in 2020 and less in 2021, which was the COVID pandemic. The COVID pandemic had an impact on all the schedules and the deadlines of the lines that were under construction. There were many restrictions, cities where we could not work. And even with all these restrictions, we still are being able to accelerate most of our projects. Next question is from Fabio Hovai. I'd like to know what is the, do you expect to be able to improve the RAP? Yes, I already touched on this. We are requesting a rebalancing. There's a range of values, and the minimum value is what you saw on our chart. I think it was 396, 397 million RAP. So this is what we will discuss in the arbitration process. The base date is 2019. The 329 is for March this year. The 396 has a base date of March 2019, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember exactly what the date was, but this is the range in which we will have the arbitration process. Question from Wesley Zanoni. Are you expecting any increase in your payout in the coming years? Well, this is something we are already doing. If you look at our numbers, we've been increasing our payout year after year. And after this very relevant cycle of investments, this is something that will happen naturally and is already happening. When you look at our flow, our dividend payout flow, you see that this is already happening. In November, we went from 150 three or four years ago to 300 or nearly 300 this year. So this means that the payout is increasing every year. And next year, we will be completing this very relevant cycle of investments for the company. And there will be an increase. It will certainly be higher than it was this year. And this is something that you will be continuing, you will continue to see year after year. The next question is from Gauthier Abreu. Can you please give us an update of the option exercise with Taesa? Well, that depends greatly on Taesa. I understand that Taesa has a restriction with CEMIG. Although CEMIG had announced that it was selling Taesa's shares, they had some problems. I think they had some political problems, and the process is now on hold, from what I know. So maybe they will resume this process in the future. We're not sure, but we're always open to discuss with Taesa to reach an agreement that is good for both parties, to reach the best agreement for both companies. We're looking at all the alternatives possible. And I think it lost momentum due to the sale of Taesa and some political issues. There were some things that were challenged in the Minas Gerais Assembly, the House of Representatives. So they decided to leave this process on hold for now to make this process clearer, maybe to clarify some things, answer questions, and discuss. This is the best way to do this. If and it makes sense for CEMIG to be doing things this way. The next question is from Felipe Molina. Can you comment on your expectation to receive the TCE RAP? Oh, the TCE. Okay, the TCE is the project in Colombia. This should start taking place as of January next year. We already submitted a request because the way it works you request a waiver. We have a mediator company that works for the government bodies and monitors the schedule. The license there was issued, but there was a restriction for the last 15 hours. We are now negotiating to get clearance for the last 15 hours. But we should start the construction work in January. And with the waiver, we will start to generate revenue as of January as well. Now, just one final comment. It is now under administrative negotiations. We already requested the waiver. The mediator company already gave us their permit, and now we're waiting for them. And with the waiver, we will be able to start generating revenue starting January, which is also the contractual term to start generating revenue. Since we have no further questions, we are now closing this question and answer session. Now I hand the conference over to Mr. José Luis for his final remarks. Thank you all for participating in this call today. And as I always say, we are totally at your service. Should you have any questions, should you need any clarifications, you can reach us at any time. Have a great afternoon, and we'll see you in our next conference call with the presentation of the numbers for quarter four. Thank you and have a great afternoon. This webinar is now over. Have a great afternoon and you may disconnect your lines now.